listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 64, The Lord of the Rings, Ralph Bakshi style. So many miniskirts!
Hear ye, hear ye. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, Ralph Bakshi, and everything in between. We are your Middle-Earth hosts tonight. I bring you Morgan Stradling, Merchant of Gilbert, lover of animation and tamer of ferocious little shaggy puppies.
Huzzah!
Hail Morgan!
Thank you. How do you do?
And also Chelsea Robson, minstrel of the land of Nashville, bringing her love of song to brighten our dreary podcast in the darkest night. Hail Chelsea Robson!
Huzzah!
And I am Mason Smith, creator of artistic moving automatons and student of the Mystic College of Texas A&M. And aspiring animation wizard, I bid thee all hello. Yay, ThunderTube!
Hello, everybody!
Hello, hello, hello!
So, for those of you who are new to our show, we are the Animation Addicts, also known as the Rotoscopers. And this is our show, the Animation Addicts Podcast, where we talk about an animated film, past or present. And in case you haven't been able to figure out, we are venturing back in time. We are doing a period animated film, Lord of the Rings, directed by Ralph Bakshi.
Huzzah!
This will be Chelsea's new favorite word in throughout the duration of the episode.
I think I'm done. I'm done.
To have something on there that a lot of people were like asking about, and that is our Nerdy Couch discussion. But we decided to hold off because Mason wasn't there, and so this time we are going to be bringing you our fantastically much awaited Nerdy Couch discussion on Horses of Disney.
I'm getting vibes of spirit from two episodes ago.
Hey, Matt Damon, get out of here.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
This will be the crowning moment of all of our horse episodes. Of course, The Lord of the Rings has horses in it, but
it has Bill the Pony, so that's the tie-in.
Oh, little Bill. who gets horribly murdered in the
right?
movie?
Right? I was like, oh my gosh, they're like leaving Bill.
It's not like Peter Jackson's where it's just like, go home, Bill, and Bill, like, trots home. Yeah. The watcher in the water totally swallows him up.
Oh,
I have to go back to the book and figure out if that's what happened.
I wouldn't be so surprised. Anyways.
Yeah, so this is going to be our super sweet nerdy couch discussion on Disney horses. And thank you for waiting until I was back from my exile under a mountain of animation homework. So now I can enjoy this nerdy couch discussion with y'all. The theme of Disney horses has been in Disney films like up until recently, like Tangled had a Maximus. But it even goes back to horses with names in Snow White, like in the first animated feature for Disney. Mm-hmm. And it goes back even further than that because there were horses in the Walt Disney cartoons.
Yes. Lots of Disney horses. I think the first is Horace Horsecollar, who you can't forget about him, even though Disney seems to forget about him from time to time. But he is sort of like part of the original Disney horse gang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here's a little bit of trivia. Who was the very first original voice of Horace Horsecollar?
Probably Walt Disney, since he was Mickey Mouse's voice.
No. Bill Farmer.
Yeah!
Yes! What?
I was totally guessing.
Bill Farmer?
That was one of his trivias on that episode.
That's true, in our interview with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Up until that point, Horace Horsecollar didn't have a voice. And so, was it for the Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, it was the Prince and the Pauper.
Oh, yeah. He needed a voice, and so they...
Oh, so it was a trick question. He didn't even have a voice.
I said he was the original voice. He was.
Yeah, he was the original voice. It's just that...
It just happened 10 years
time,
ago.
Right. For a long time, he did not have a voice. Okay.
She showed you.
That's good.
So Snow White, her prince, has a horse. No name, at least that we know of. So I think we need to move on to Cinderella. She had a horse. Very nice horse. A little sweet little guy named Major.
Major.
I like him.
He has a good role in the movie. He's not really too big, but he turns into a human, which is hilarious because then he has the horse teeth.
Oh, that's right.
And then he also is instrumental in sort of saving Cinderella at the end. Bruno more so than you know, Captain. But
oh,
he's
Bruno.
There. I just, like, the most iconic part about Major to me is the very opening scene of Cinderella, where Cinderella is, like, a little girl, and she's watering Major at, like, their fountain with her dad right there, and they're, like, petting him.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this is such a sweet scene. And, like, if you look at the horse, he's very well-kept and strong and, like, is a good-looking horse. And then you fast-forward about 15 years later, or 10, I don't know, you know, the house is in disarray. And then all the animals that used to be so stately are, like, wah-wah. They're just sort of, like, run down. They turn all goofy. Yeah. And it kind of, like, represents, like, Cinderella's whole life. Like, everything just kind of isn't so awesome.
Yeah, and horses live to be about 30 years. So unless that horse was about 15 at that time, when Cinderella was a girl, you know, there's no reason why he should be in such disarray.
Prince Philip had Samson, who had a certain affinity for carrots.
Extra bucket of oats?
Oh.
I think he was the first one where it started just having a little bit of...
Sass.
This was the entrance of horses and their sass.
And attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Why do the horses always have to have attitude? Because they're like an essential counterpart to the hero, you know, hero on the horse.
Yeah.
So like geographically, that seems like a good place to put a foil to them. I don't know.
Well, and it's also supposed to be like, this is my buddy. Like we spend a lot of time together as partners and on the, you know, the Old West or on the plains, or I guess most of these movies don't have an Old
West.
That's
true.
But it's like we're together. And so like this horse understands me more than maybe anyone else understands me. And even though he can't talk, or she, you know, we get each other. So then we move on, and for a while there aren't very many horses. Aristocats has a horse.
I love Frou Frou.
Oh, Frou Frou. I've made the headlines.
Like, she always has a fantastic little hat, and she talks in such an uppity way. I love it. Oh, hello.
and she has her own little singing part in the finale.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
She gets in on the action.
That's hilarious.
I think she also, what does she also do to Edgar? Kick him into the box that goes to Timbuktu?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing horses are good for. Kicking the bad guy. We need to do the Aristocat sometime. Like, did Edgar survive the trip to Timbuktu?
I don't know. That's why I'm waiting for the Aristocats 2.
That sequel is highly anticipated.
Yeah. We should write Glenn Keane and be like, hey, can you like do animation for this movie that we thought of?
We'll do the Kickstarter.
We'll make a video. Guys, let's face it, internet, there needs to be an Aristocats too.
Speaking of horses that just plummet the bad guy, in 101 Dalmatians, there is Captain.
Ah, that's right. Fire one.
Fire two.
Good times.
I agree.
Sergeant, I say Sergeant.
So after this, there's kind of a period of no horses, more or less. And so we jump into, I guess, The Little Mermaid has seahorses, but I'm not counting those. And then
Doesn't count.
We go to Belle. Philippe, which is the, I'm going to say it right now, the worst Disney horse is.
Philippe is the worst Disney horse?
Because he's such, we talked about this in our very first episode, he's such a coward.
Those are wolves!
You do not see Belle out there, like, swinging a stick at the wolves. Come on.
Maximus would just get a sword out and just start killing the wolves.
It's true.
He would just eat the wolves.
Well, no, like, but Philippe is the only sound mind in that. He's like, oh, yeah, let's, you know, you have Maurice, and he's going off. He's like, oh, yeah, that dark alley looks great. He's like, I don't think
yeah,
so. Let's
Maurice
go over
is a very
here.
Street smart.
Well, he is kind of a loon, so.
So he's the foil to the loon.
Foil to the loon.
That's not a great, okay, let me.
That may be our title for our episode.
Foil to the loon, yes.
That sounds very Lord of the Rings.
And then, let's see, what would come chronologically after...
Achilles. It'd be sweet Achilles. If Pocahontas had a horse, if she had, like, a pinto or, like, a painted mare. That'd be really, really cool. But didn't exist, so I'm making up horses. That'll be the end. We'll talk about horses that we wish we had.
Okay.
But we have Achilles from The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh my gosh! I saw half of Hunchback in theaters, and then the theater broke down, and we had to leave. I don't know what happens.
You never
to
finished.
Achilles.
Oh my gosh, Mason!
Hunchback is not my favorite Disney film.
People love it. Love it, just like they loved Hercules. But we know how you feel about Hercules.
Well, it's not how I feel about Hercules. It's just that I've been cursed to never get to watch the whole thing. So I'm like never. I haven't seen it, so I'm not as crazy about Hercules as everybody else.
I see.
Isn't it on Netflix? I should just watch it on Netflix tonight.
You totally should. And then you can go back and listen to our episode on it.
Wow. I can get the listener experience.
Okay, back to the horses. So Achilles, he's okay. Like, he has this, he's kind of a one-trick horse, one-trick pony. Dang it. I tried to change the idiom when it totally worked in that situation. He's a one-trick pony. He just sits and, you know, it's very useful in certain situations, but that's basically all he does.
Yeah, you know. I believe next is Pegasus.
Pegasus!
He's seriously such a great horse. I like Pegasus. I would have a Pegasus. Of course I would. He can fly.
Who doesn't
want Pegasus?
This is why you need to watch Hercules.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay, I can't
let's
forget
see.
The girl Pegasus in Hercules. We didn't even talk about that, but I love to.
I really was attracted to you.
Okay, so next is Khan, who's Mulan's horse.
Ah, and... voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch.
No.
Oh, which Khan are we talking about? Oh, Khan the horse from Mulan. Okay, yeah, I like him a lot.
Tell me more.
Because he's not like this goofy looking horse that they have, you know, like Major, Cinderella's horse, or the horse that's with Mr. Toad in that one movie. Or Ichabod's crane horse for that matter. He's just like, oh, y'all here! You know, just kind of goofy looking.
Uh-huh.
Khan is a imperial stallion, if you will.
That it is.
And part cow.
Your cow here would die of fright. Down, Bessie. But yeah, I like Khan just because he's kind of this, like, stoic figure who doesn't really need to... I don't know, he doesn't really need, like, to be goofy to be entertaining. He's more like the, oh gosh, these humans are so dumb type of horse.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a long-suffering horse that has to put up with everyone.
He's a good pet. Good little pal.
He's a pal.
So I think coming up next is, well, it's not technically Disney, but now that Disney owns Pixar, I think it counts. Bullseye.
He's Woody's horse.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love Bullseye. He doesn't have any words. At the end of Toy Story 3, they really should have pulled a nut job and had him speak his one line at the end of the film. He could be like, "Bye, Andy." And they might be like, "What?" "No, Bullseye, you never talk in front of humans." But I liked Bullseye a lot because he was super loyal to Woody, you know, because he knew his role in the show was to be Woody's horse, you know, and mm-hmm. So they instantly bonded, and all he wanted to do was help and be with Woody, so he, like, and so it made a lot of scenes hilarious, like the Cheetos scene, where he starts crunching on the Cheetos, and he wants to lick Al's fingers because of the cheese.
Wait, was he in Toy Story 3?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, was he?
I don't remember.
Yeah, he was in Toy Story 2, and then he was in Toy Story 3.
Okay, because
he's just part of the gang. I mean, even he's in the poster for it.
Yeah, that's true.
He goes basically wherever Jesse goes.
Yeah, so he goes. He becomes more like a Jesse counterpart than. Well, he still. That's true. He is in Toy Story 3 because Woody's like, "Fine, screw you guys. I'm going to go find Andy." And Bullseye's like, "Can I come?" And, you know, Woody's like, "No, stay, cruel master." No.
Mm-hmm.
Woody, okay. Hey. Horse. I'm just kidding.
Now you're going too far. This is your own Mason.
This is Masonic interpretation. This is a Masonic delusion. No, this is coming back when Woody had that really jerk face personality when they were just doing previs for Toy Story. You know how Woody's character was like really mean to everyone. Oh,
yeah.
Anyway.
A
little bit pompous. Okay, speaking of pompous, we've got Maximus. Would you say he's next, or Angus?
No, Maximus.
Certainly. I think he is the best Disney horse.
Whoa.
He's like action horse. I hereby dub him the Jack Bauer of horses. He's just unstoppable. He knows how to sword fight. He's mean. He doubles as a paper shredder.
And a ring bearer.
And a ring bearer. Let the ring bearing horse come forth.
Yeah, they really did a good job in putting all other Disney horses to shame. It's like they were. I'm sure when they were making this movie, they're thinking, "Okay, we like Disney horses. We like Samson, but how can we one up all these guys?" Well,
yeah, he's the baddest of the bad, you know. And then in the end, he's friends with Flynn Rider, you know. Mm-hmm. First, he wants to kill him, and then they become good buddies. But yeah, I like how human Maximus is, but at the same time, he is a horse, you know?
Yeah, he's a character that actually is, like, pretty important to the plot.
That's true.
I'm not saying some of the other horses are. I mean, Pegasus is pretty crucial to the plot for the most part in Hercules. But some of these other horses, like, they're there and they have personality, or sometimes they have no personality, but they're not as big of a deal.
What you say? Mode of transportation.
Doesn't the genie turn Abu into a giant stallion?
Oh my gosh, it does! Oh, with a beautiful mane.
That one was awesome.
Very curly.
It was basically it was the same horse as Prince Achmed. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I getcha.
Before he turned him into a Cadillac.
Oh, that's right. And but yeah, I think Maximus is definitely the best. And he becomes captain of the guard. And totally eliminated crime in the kingdom and all the supply of apples or something like that. So I love Maximus. He's my favorite Disney horse. I claim him.
Okay, he's yours.
All right, go for it.
If I had a horse, Disney horse, I would choose Maximus not to ride him, but to have him along as a combat buddy.
Yeah, that works too.
Treat him as an equal.
And I'm sure he'll take all your food.
Well, no. I don't know. We might have a problem then.
No.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. Which one is y'all's favorite Disney horses?
Wait, one more.
What?
So last minute horses.
Last minute horses.
Meredith's horse, Angus. I had big hopes for Angus, and he really didn't pan out to be much of anything. And then Anna's horse, who in Frozen really doesn't do much except for runs away. Another horrible horse like Philippe. And then we have Hans's horse, Lemon.
Which, only has a name because we dubbed him that.
Love
and
it.
Now it's official.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome.
So to wrap it up, Mason, take it away.
Okay, so I've already told y'all who my favorite Disney horse is. So what is y'all's favorite Disney horse, ladies? You can choose Maximus if you want.
I had a lot of high hopes for Angus as well, just because I have an affinity for giant horses like that. But I'm still going to go, well, Philippe, I guess, is in that realm too. So I would go Philippe before I did Angus. But I really like Samson. So I'm going to stick with Samson.
So honorable mentions are, I like Khan a lot. And Samson really is a good horse. But I'm going to go with Pegasus here.
Oh.
I think Pegasus is pretty darn awesome.
That's true.
Well, all right.
But they're all pretty cool. Oh, speaking of, there are princesses that have horses due to the enchanted stables.
non-canonical.
Yeah, so Jasmine has a made-up horse that's obviously an Arabian. Apparently Sleeping Beauty got a horse, too, because, you know, you gotta ride horses with the prince. So it's named Buttercup the Brave.
Oh, brother!
And Ariel has one called Baby Bo. Yeah. No, those don't count.
That's funny. Baby Bo. Okay. Let's see. If Tarzan had a horse, what would it be? What kind of it would it be? What would it be named?
Jaguar?
No, it has to be a horse. It could be a zebra. So if you're listening to the podcast, send us a email, or better yet, voicemail. Mm-hmm. About who your favorite Disney horse is, or if you have no favorite Disney horse, tell us about a non-Disney animated horse that you like, but Disney would be cooler because we love Disney. And then if you remember any horses that we might have missed, we don't want them to be left out, so let us know in a voicemail or through our social media.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
On to the main event!
Right, so our main discussion, as we hinted at the beginning, is The Lord of the Rings, animated film by Ralph Bakshi.
Beyond the farthest reaches of the imagination, and deep within the human heart, in what is known as the Third Age of Middle-earth, a tale is told of deeds and beings, a tale of a day when a great shadow will fall across the earth. And ancient sorcerers were locked in mortal combat with the phantoms of the night. This is the magnificent gift of J.R.R. Tolkien left to the human heart, the vision beyond imagination. The Lord of the Rings.
A notorious animator and somewhat infamous animator. So this is the first time we've done a Bakshi film.
Yes.
We've had requests for Bakshi, and they mentioned Fritz the Cat, which was the first X-rated animated film. So we're not going to do that. In fact, there are only a few Bakshi films that we could probably review on this clean podcast of ours.
It's true. There, for the most part, it's not going to happen. But The Lord of the Rings, hey.
It's family-friendly.
It's surprisingly family-friendly to an extent.
What? And
hey, there's a lot of blood at the end of this thing.
Yeah. Well, disclaimer, I don't know exactly if we get the name Bakshi wrong, don't send us an angry it's email or what is it?
Oh, I was just gonna say it's our dialect, so hey, it is what it is.
It's our dialect. In Texas, it's pronounced the Bakshi. So yeah, don't send us any angry messages about us mispronouncing the name. That doesn't count as a mistake. It just counts as a guy having a really hard to pronounce, uncommon last name. Anyway, so yeah, for those of us who don't know who Ralph Bakshi is, I will proceed to do my quick biography lecture on him. But I promise it'll be fun. So Ralph Bakshi was born in 1938 in Palestine as a child, and I didn't know this until recently. He actually lived in minority neighborhoods like Brownsville, New York, and Foggy Bottom in Washington, D.C., where it was predominantly black neighborhoods. So most of his early films are actually about inner city life and crime and such, and they directly and blatantly address racial stereotypes. So that's interesting because looking through his catalog of films, I wondered why there was those kind of social influences. Is because as a child, he lived in black segregated neighborhoods. In fact, at Jefferson High School, where we went to high school, he was the only white student. But he didn't last long at Thomas Jefferson. Apparently, he was more interested in, quote, broads, mouthing off, and doodling, unquote, than academics. That really sounds like my high school career, which probably means I have a promising future as an animator. From Thomas Jefferson, he was transferred to the Manhattan School of Industrial Art, where he graduated with an award in cartooning. So he found his purpose there, as you will. His first job at the age of 18 was doing cell polishing for Terry Toons, and that's the studio that produced Mighty Mouse. For anyone who knows what Mighty Mouse is, I mean, I'm sure we all know what Mighty Mouse is, but I've never seen a Mighty Mouse cartoon, I don't think.
Here I come to save the day.
Oh, that's his theme song?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I don't know anything about Mighty Mouse. So at the age of 25, he was actually promoted to animation director at Terry Toons, and he started doing his own stuff. But he eventually left and started his own studio. His first production was Fritz the Cat, which actually was not an original idea of Bakshi's. It was actually a film adaptation of a satirical comic strip. And as we stated on a few episodes, it's kind of an in-joke with us. Fritz the Cat, the film we will never review on the website, because it is the first full-length animated feature to be rated X by the MPAA. After that came Heavy Traffic a year later, which featured inner city life, and then you got Skin and a few other films that mostly dealt with like inner city culture and crime and stuff like that. Several years later, in the late 1970s, he started branching off into fantasy films. So he was doing a film called War of the Wizards that was picked up by Fox that was actually being produced the same time George Lucas was producing the first Star Wars film. So this might seem like a tangent, but it's actually a pretty significant part of Bakshi's career. So Bakshi, like George Lucas, claimed legal right and monetary right to all merchandising for War of the Wizards. And he ended up changing the name to Wizards to avoid confusing the name of the film with Star Wars. The Fox executives were already struggling finding money for Lucas to finish Star Wars, and so they actually told them both, look, you have to find your own funds to finish the film if you want to finish. And so to save money, Bakshi turned to an animating technique that we get our name from. He turned to rotoscoping.
Woo-hoo! Go rotoscoping!
That's us!
It's the coolest ever!
Actually, rotoscoping is not the best type of animation, and it's actually cheap. And you guys are hacks for having a podcast that's called. How dare! I'm going back to playing Minecraft anyway. So yeah, rotoscoping. This is like your first episode, and you don't know what rotoscoping is. Number one, shame on you. Number two, just kidding. Number three, rotoscoping is where you take actual live footage of that's shot of actual actors, and you kind of trace over it so that you don't have to know what to draw. Basically, you're tracing these images, and you kind of fill in the animation with these with this live action footage. So it is an easier, cheaper, quicker way to animate, but many will argue that it loses the magic of animation. It just becomes life and not the sought after illusion of life. And we've had a few discussions on rotoscoping on the show. But suffice it to say that Bakshi turned to rotoscoping to help finish Wizards. And it kind of became this like signature technique of his films. So he had a lot of these films at Lord of the Rings, Fire and Ice, which I think I mentioned on our very first episode. And it was like this kooky animated film about barbarians. It's like straight out of like Barbarians Monthly magazine. It's very illustrations are all done by like the guy who does the Iced Earth album posters. Anyway, so he did quite a large range of film work, and it was all darker, edgier, and sometimes adult oriented. And that was kind of his shtick, was providing alternative entertainment in the animation world. By 2000, Bakshi retired semi-formally and began teaching animation. In 2003, he started doing more formal animation classes. And he has done some visual work and worked for some shorts and features. But last year, he actually funded his latest animated feature entitled Last Days of Coney Island on Kickstarter. So you can look that up. It's going to be a 2D traditional animated film. It doesn't look like it'll all be totally rotoscoped, but you know, it might have that signature rotoscoping style. And so that's where he is today. He's still in animation. In fact, he's pretty active on Twitter. He'll send out like images of his films, and he'll answer people's questions. And so it's actually kind of cool. He also has a website, which, like the Rankin Bass website, is really needs a makeover. half the links to the film don't work, and the formatting is very web 1.0 for my fellow business and marketing majors. But anyway, heaven bless him. Ralph Bakshi is a fascinating character in the animation world, and we're super happy to be reviewing his production of The Lord of the Rings. So here's some quotes for your consideration.
Can I say
just
something?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So sorry, you in the back.
One thing I think really interesting about Ralph Bakshi is that he's sort of one of the only animator directors who kind of can be seen on their own level. Like, a lot of times the directors aren't, like, I feel like there's Ralph Bakshi, who's a big name, there's Richard Williams, there's Don Bluth, there's Walt Disney, but then some of the other directors sort of fall. I mean, I don't even think John Lasseter is seen, well, as a director on the level.
You take that back.
At the level that these guys are, like, doesn't matter what studio they're with, they're just seen as their movies are their movies, not the movies by the studio by
that's
them.
True.
You know what I mean?
And I think it was because of the time when, you know, all of this was happening, when they were trying to kind of branch off of just the Disney was the only thing out there. And so they were the only ones making a name for themselves, as it were. And, you know, you got all of the names that you mentioned were kind of integral in progressing the medium forward, I believe.
Yeah, it was kind of like this atmosphere of like join Walt Disney or fight against him, you know. And I don't want to make it sound like it was this like huge conflict, you know, with all this strife and stuff. But like, guys they'd made this like really crazy brave decision to just branch out and try to reach to audiences without the name of Walt Disney attached to their animated works. And so against Disney, I mean, obviously, you know, amazing, you know, business person and thinker and innovator, but these guys were the rebellious animator crowd, you know.
Well, it's
and they did make a name for themselves, and it's kind of cool.
It's also the fact that each one of them they were the ones putting up all the money for it. I mean, if you go with Disney, you've got the power of the mouse behind you, and you got funds. You know, they run at least 80% of the world's media today. And if you're going at it by yourself, you got to have some guts and a lot of fortitude to get through all the crap that comes along with not only making a film, but also marketing it and doing everything involved to make anything a success. And that's just going to take your life.
Yeah. Now, these guys were picked up by big Hollywood distributors. But cool is that these guys always seemed like Don Bluth, Richard Williams, Ralph Bakshi, they always seemed to retain independent spirit, and you get the sense that at times I bet they just fought against executives to be like, no, this is my film, this is the way I want it, this is how it's going to be.
I think they were the executives.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Not were they? Or,
you know, for their, you know,
the distributors had the executive team. So, for example, I was reading when he was doing Fritz the Cat, the executive team, they wanted him to tone it down. They wanted him to change the direction. And he said, no. I mean, he really put his foot down and and stuck with
it. And while I would never agree with the content matter of Fritz the Cat or support it, I do support his independent spirit.
Totally.
And there's something to be said about that. You know, these were true pioneers and rebels in the animation world. Someone should write a book on these guys.
Yeah.
I'm sure there
is a book. Do they have one?
I don't know.
Do they have one? Maybe on Amazon? Maybe through our affiliate link? Rotoscopers.com/Amazon? Go there?
I'll do some research to see if this book exists. If so, then there will be a link in the show notes, rotoscopers.com/64.
Yeah. Okay, so Ralph Bakshi on a few words and some general sentiments on his adaptation of The Lord of the Rings. So when Bakshi approached the studio and proposed that he direct a three-part animated film adaptation of The Lord of the Rings, to quote Bakshi, he said, they said fine because Borman handed in his 700-page script and do I want to read it? I said, well, is it all three books in one? I said, yes, but he's changed a lot of the characters and he's added characters. He's got some sneakers he's merchandising in the middle. This is what he's saying. Bakshi said, I said, no, I'd rather not read it. I'd rather do the books as close as we can, using Tolkien's exact dialogue and scenes. They said, fine. Knocked me down because we don't understand a word Borman wrote in his 700-page manuscript. We never read the books. We ain't got time to read it. You understand it, Ralph, so go do it. That's what these executives said. Never read the books. You know, they were just gonna produce this 700-page script that involved merchandising some sneakers in the middle. So as anyone who's seen this adaptation will notice, the heavy use of rotoscoping and kind of the crazy animation style, this is what Bakshi had to say about the animation of the characters. It's not that important to me how a hobbit looks. Everyone has their own idea of what the characters look like. It's important to me that the energy of Tolkien survives. It's important that the quality of animation matches the quality of Tolkien. Who cares how big Gandalf's nose is? The tendency of animation is just to worry about the drawing. If the movie works, whether you agree about Bilbo's face or not, the rest becomes inconsequential. So that's really interesting. And a side note here, Bakshi actually met with Tolkien's daughter, Priscilla, to discuss how the film would be made. Yeah, they traveled and visited her, and she like showed him where J.R.R. Tolkien wrote his books. And so that is something of note, that Bakshi actually made the effort to consult with the surviving Tolkien family members to figure out how the film would be made. It's definitely evident that instead of stylistic choices, he did like thematic and like element choices taken from The Lord of the Rings and interpreted them in his film. And so on the film's visual style, he had this to say, the film is a clash of a lot of styles like in all my films. I like moody backgrounds. I like drama. I like a lot of saturated color. Of course, a big problem was controlling the artists so they drew alike. How do you have 600 people draw one character alike? The tendency is to want to let the artist have some freedom, and someone would leave off a hat or a horn or a hat on a character. I think we've achieved real illustration as opposed to cartoons. Artistically, we can do anything we want. And so I find it kind of hard to swallow all that because I do believe in strength in drawing for animated films, and I do believe in artistic freedom. But it's obvious that he wasn't going for a cartoon. He was going for, quote, real illustration. It's almost as if he was wanting to make an animated storybook for, like, animated illustrations for the books.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. He was trying to go for something different and larger than life than what animation had to offer. But I kind of disagree with what he's saying is, how can you get 600 artists to draw the same? I mean, you look at the movies that Disney put out in the 40s, and for the most part, they're pretty on... Well, I mean, maybe they're not 100% on model, but pretty on model, right?
I would say so. I mean, yeah, like you said, there's little parts where you're like, obviously that was an in-betweener drawing and not the actual person in charge of the character, but I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, in the spirit of being brief, I don't know. I think animated films, I get what he's trying to say, but I believe that animation is more effective and more of an art form when you have strong drawings when you care, when you do care. Okay, good animation is also well-designed animation. Character design, visual development, your pre-viz has to be really strong. So yes, to me, Gandalf, the size of Gandalf's nose is important. Would this film have gotten a different legacy, A, if he had finished it, which he did not finish all three books in this film, and B, if he had taken more time to fully animate and fully flesh out the character design of every person in The Lord of the Rings, which in his defense is a daunting task because The Lord of the Rings has a huge cast,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, no, I don't agree with the whole, like, hey, who cares about this character design, you know, we're making illustrations, but I do understand what he's saying, and I do respect it.
You know, it's interesting. One of the main things that came to my mind as I was watching this is it kind of felt like a student film. I mean, granted, nowadays our access to technology is so incredible. You know, things that they were making in huge movies with, like I can have HD quality on my phone. You know, it's crazy the type of technology that we have access to. But, like, I don't know, just kind of it felt like it was – he didn't pay attention to the details, and there were a lot of things that could have been made a lot better. And just, I think that those things really take a knock at the professionalism of it. And it just may feel like kind of something mediocre when you don't take that time to really flesh things out.
What say ye, Morgan?
Well, it's so hard to compare this film to, you know, films of today. But then again, you look at, you know, Disney's movies in the 30s and 40s, and they were very good. They feel complete. They don't, you
know.
They
hold up for even today.
Exactly. But then again, they had a little bit bigger budget for than I imagine he ever had. And so he had to work with what he did. And so I see mm-hmm. this more as an independent film rather than a, you know, it is a feature-length film, but it's on an independent budget for the most part.
Correct.
I mean, he
yeah.
doesn't have the staff, the resources, and the talent that he needs. And that's why he had to use the rotoscoping techniques to such extents as he did. And didn't he say that he sort of regretted using them?
Yeah, there's a interview they did in 1983 where he did kind of admit that he regrets using so much rotoscoping in his films. So it's really up for the viewer to decide. Personally, my initial thoughts when I saw all the rotoscoping scenes before I kind of took a step back and looked at it in the perspective that Morgan just said, I was actually a little insulted as a viewer that there was so much just these posterized filtered scenes of rotoscoped action. I was like, and I wanted to be like, why didn't he just make a live action Lord of the Rings, you know, instead of this stuff?
No, Jared, as we were
I'm
watching,
surprised Jared watched it.
Yeah,
I know, right?
It's because I was watching it and he wanted to watch basketball, and I said, no, I'm watching this movie and I'm going to finish watching this movie. So I kind of sat around and the basketball game ended because this movie is so long. I know. Horrible life. But within the first 5 minutes, he was like, this is the worst animated film I've ever seen. And yes, you can quote me on your podcast. And I think that's how the unsophisticated viewer would view this. Like, initially, it's like you have this cowering reaction where you're like, ew, that doesn't look good. And you don't want to give it the time of day.
I'm just going to say, I am one of those people. The first time I saw this, my brother had rented it. And this was like, you know, 5, 10, maybe ago probably, and he was watching it, and I was disgusted. I was like, what are you watching? Why? Like, oh, it's Lord of the Rings, it's awesome. I'm like, oh my gosh. And so coming back when you guys were like, oh, we're gonna be doing this movie, I was like, no, that movie that I walked by and I thought, ew, why are we watching this? So here I am. I'm talking about this movie that I vowed I would never watch before.
This kind of establishes our little biography on Ralph Bakshi. We know a little more about him. And now that we do, let's really delve into this amazing epic. We begin with the titles, Lord of the Rings! It has this overly dramatic opening music, very gloomy. Did you know that Ralph Bakshi originally wanted Led Zeppelin to do some of the music for this film?
That would have been really epic.
That would have been rockin'.
I could have gone for that.
Yeah. Oh, Let the Sun Shine Down Upon My Back. I am a traveler of both time and space to be where I am. Okay, anyway. Cat, look.
Well, the music in this whole movie is, like, really over the top and dramatic and foreboding.
Yeah. foreboding. That's like, well, you know, half of the first book is very foreboding.
Yeah, it's all about true.
It's all about the prophecy, the One Ring, you know, and yeah. Gandalf has to roll every R ever said. Frodo. Anyway, you know how the Ents have like a horribly long way of talking? Well, Gandalf has a horribly long way of rolling all his R's. Anyway, so we get this goofy, kooky prologue. This red foreground, and then in the back, such lifelike animation.
I'm pretty sure I saw Peter Pan in there.
I'm pretty sure it's real people, okay? That's, can I ask a legitimate question? So, rotoscoping, like, at some points, I don't even know how you could consider this rotoscoping, because it was just real people at different points in the movie. Like, barely traced over it, but for some sections, I was like, no, that's not even frame by frame by frame that they took. They just took the whole footage and put a weird filter on it, and so does that count? Is that technically under the umbrella of rotoscoping?
Yes, because the technique could have been filling in blocks of black color instead of just filming shadowy figures against a red backdrop.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So it goes over the plot of the prophecy of the ring is sealed versus Sauron, or Sauron, as they call it. One thing I love about watching... first of all, backtrack. That there are different adaptations of the Lord of the Rings books besides Peter Jackson's films. Which are great, but some kids will grow up and live their entire lives knowing only Peter Jackson's interpretation, you know?
It's totally true.
When they think of Gollum, they will think of Andy Serkis Gollum.
Mm-hmm.
When they think of Frodo, they think of Elijah Wood. Cute and cuddly. So I think it was really refreshing and awesome to see different visual interpretations, but also different pronunciations of the names, you know, different ways of looking at creatures like the Balrog, you know, or Gollum himself. So I like that.
Yeah, it was interesting. Although, can I just say, I mean, I feel like we're going to be referencing Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings. Throughout this whole thing, because it's so epic and so grand and incredible, even though this movie was 20 years before, I mean, we're comparing it to something that wasn't even around yet. But yet, I can't help but not compare. And I feel bad for anyone in the future who wants to even take a stab at Lord of the Rings, because good luck.
Yeah, you will be forever known as the one who copied Peter Jackson's version.
Yes.
Can you imagine, like, if 100 years, if we actually last 100 years from now, but 100 years from now, they just another series for Harry Potter, 50 years from now, 30 years from now, can you imagine? We're gonna be all old, like, meh, the old films are better.
Chris Columbus was awesome.
It's gonna be old voice. Crazy. Yeah. Now, Yeah, at the same time, I saw some scenes that were like totally used in PJ's version. I call him PJ
because you're on such good terms.
Put that on my luggage.
PJ.
So good old PJ. He actually took at least some inspiration from Bakshi's interpretation. In fact, he after initially denying that he watched it, that he ever watched it, he confirmed that was his first. Exposure to the Lord of the Rings was Ralph Bakshi's film. And so the scene where he's like, where Bilbo is saying all the names, you know, Brandybucks, Tooks, Proudfoots, Proudfeet, you know, the Proudfeet scene is actually an exact copy of the shot used in Bakshi's film. Homage, if you will. There's also the, when the hobbits are hiding from the Black Rider, who's actually a ringwraith, you know, and they're kind of in a ravine, crevice of a rock, and then the ringwraith is kind of looking over the ledge. That was used in Peter Jackson's version. And then this really cool shot of the camera revolving around the Aragorn and the hobbits on top of Weathertop, that was used in Peter Jackson's film as well. And so there are some cool homages to Bakshi's version.
Oh. See, that's one thing that as I was watching this, I was wondering, okay, is
that's word for word Jackson's version. So is that direct word for word from the book? Because I have read the books, but I clearly don't have it memorized. But I'm interested to go back now and maybe read the books and see, you know, because that was one of the things I've actually wanted to do, was a direct near word for word adaptation.
Yeah, that's true. So you kind of, in your mind, you kind of have to reverse engineer the Peter Jackson version and be like, okay, this wasn't all artistic license. Some of the stuff Peter Jackson's version was completely made up, but it was all, some of it was also taken word for word from the book, like Bakshi's version. And so there's this like weird connection, and it's kind of hard to wrap your head around it. So I tried to delete my knowledge, previous knowledge of Lord of the Rings films as much as possible, and just try to take in this version. The characters look weird.
That's all you're going to say.
Gandalf, the Hobbits.
Gandalf, okay, yeah, okay. For one, the Hobbits. Frodo looks like a chubby little child because that was probably the actor that they got to play him.
Sam looks like an old man. Like, what?
I hated Sam in this version. He looks so dopey.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm Mr. Frodo. Dude. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't hear nothing, sir.
That's how Sam is in general, let's be honest here.
Well, he's not as lovable as in the Peter Jackson.
Frodo reminded me of a chubby Peter Pan. His voice kind of was reminiscent of Bobby Driscoll's.
I thought his voice sounded a lot like Elijah Wood.
That too, yeah.
And a lot of people on the internet agree.
I totally thought that too.
Yeah, but yeah, man capris on Frodo. Gandalf himself is very dramatic with his hand gestures, which is cool, because I imagine him being a very grave, dramatic kind of old wizard, you know. But in every scene, he's just like flinging his arms around, knocking over pots and plates. And those tiny, weird pupils in his eyes, man. He looks so scared, the old guy.
You know, one thing I don't like about this is that the character design is so weird. Some characters have a distinct style, others another very different, unique style, and especially some characters are 100% rotoscoped, others are not, and so they just don't feel like they're from the same world. Especially, I know I'm jumping the gun here, but Alien Legolas.
Alien Legolas!
I mean, he went from a hunky Adonis of a man in Jackson's version
no.
to an alien!
No. He went from an alien to a hunky Adonis. So you have to remember
that's
that.
That's true.
Our chronology of watching Peter Jackson and then Ralph Bakshi.
Right. No, I see any of the Peter Jackson stuff as... being like, okay, let's look at the past and see where we can improve as well. So, I mean, you look at Bakshi's version and all of the, honestly, you also have to think of it as Hollywood. For sure. So, any of the guy actors that they would have had in this, like, for example, you're all going to kill me, but who's the Siren? Or who's the guy that is with him most of the time?
Aragorn, son of Arathorn.
Yeah, thank you.
Chelsea.
I'm sorry. Whatever. So, Aragorn, for example, like, he just looks like a strange old man. No, he looks like the hunter.
He looks like...
the hunter from Snow White.
Yes, he totally
is. Can I just say that all these characters kind of look like characters from the Living Scriptures videos?
They all ran in the same circles.
Probably have big noses if they're bad guys. Telling you, telltale sign.
Ralph Bakshi said, "Who cares how big Saruman's nose is?"
I do, because that's my gauge. How evil are you? How big is your nose?
How big is that schnoz?
Okay, any listener, if you go back and look, if you watch any of those, that's how you know if they're evil.
King Noah's like, give me more wine. Good gosh, look at that schnoz. He's evil.
You're looking at, and all of the actors, obviously, that they had play all these characters are going to be a lot more attractive than what he was drawing in here. So I think he missed the boat as far as like making an attractive character design. Otherwise, you just don't get the girls' vote for it.
I don't think anyone gets any girls in this movie. So
there's no girls in this movie except for the one.
How refreshing.
There's like two. There's the one queen that she just kind of stands there.
Oh, yeah, Galadriel.
Uh-huh.
And Cosmic Disco Galadriel.
It was the 70s.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, the ring wraiths are extremely creepy.
Which ones are those?
Okay, so they're on their way to Bree, and he's, yeah, they're the nine kings who've turned into ring wraiths, so they're the creepy guys on the horses.
Oh, okay.
And then, so when he gets off of the horse and they're hiding, and he just kind of, you know, kind of limps over to them, you know. Great scene.
That's super, that scene is very creepy, just as creepy and ominous as it is in Peter Jackson's version. Like, I was very disturbed as he was, like, the weird limp and hunching, that's something that's not in Peter Jackson's version, but I liked it. It was like, you're not supposed to be alive, but you are, and you're
it
really
was just
hanging on by a thread.
Downright unnatural.
Yeah.
Downright unnatural indeed.
See, all that went through my head at that point was like, oh, they could totally outrun that dude. Like, he can't even walk straight. Just
not
run.
When he's on, not when he's on his devil horse.
Oh, that's true. The devil horse.
There's this one scene across, when they're trying to cross the river, and you look, and one of the ring wraiths blatantly has a cowboy hat on.
No.
Go back and watch it. I have it saved. One of them looks like he's got a cowboy hat on.
Get a screenshot of that, and we'll put that in the notes.
The overall design is really weird for the characters. So many mini skirts. They're out in the cold. They're out in the cold on the Pass of Edoras, and Aragorn is just in his tunic and mini skirt, and he is strutting it. You know.
You know, we give Rota movies like this a hard time, but you know, the thing that I do take from it is I look at it and I think about, you know, as I said before, they did take the medium a little bit further, and it just kind of progressed everything. Like, it's a very creative idea, and everything that he does with the designs, it's like, okay, I can see where you're kind of trying to, like, spread your wings a little bit here. But it kind of reminds me of how, you know, we all go through our quote-unquote awkward stage. And I'm really glad for all that I learned in junior high, but honestly, I don't want to go back and look at it.
So this is kind of animation's awkward stage.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, just away from those pictures, and you're like, all right, just move on.
Yeah, I honestly felt like I was transported back into, like, a 1930s Fleischer cartoon. Like, it just had the same feel of unsophisticated, still growing pains, still figuring out the medium. And, yeah, like, it felt like we had gone back in time 50 years. You know, I think of, like, Walt Disney's Alice cartoons.
Pretty much.
Where Alice just clearly doesn't seem in place in the world of the animation. And that's kind of how these rotoscope characters, like, they weren't even on the same plane at times, like, with the background. Like, they didn't. If you just straight animated it, you could make it work with the background, but kind of taking a character and forcing them into the already pre-designed background, it just didn't work for me. It just felt very, you know, antique.
Yeah. And then you had shots like in the Prancing Pony where it just totally destroyed all illusion of hand-drawn animation. It was just basically live-action footage with a posterization layer on top of it, down to where they had speaking lines with Frodo, and it was just like a live-action dude talking, you know? But in The Prancing Pony, there were songs for Chelsea.
Oh, yes. Just give me a little ditty
and
I'm happy.
I was actually surprised there weren't more songs in this version, because that's one thing that typifies Lord of the Rings, is that, like, there's a song, like, every few pages. They just start singing.
Characters are not afraid to burst out into song.
Mm-hmm. But here,
well,
there was really only that one song.
Yeah. Well, there was a song during the Uruk-hai attack on Helm's Deep. It was kind of a gibberish orc song. Yeah, they're like, ooh, ha, he, we are orcs, Isengard, go, go. Anyway,
That was interesting,
yeah,
right there.
So the Ringwraiths are attacking at Bree. They learn of Frodo's whereabouts. Baggins? Of course I know Baggins. Anyway, it's creepy how they kind of multiply out of each other. Did you see that one shot of them stalking either Pippin or Merry outside? And there's one following him, and then one just kind of steps out of the other and turns into two. That was cool. That was a cool effect.
Yeah, cool visuals. I mean, he really was inventive in kind of creating this creepy world.
Yeah. You know, we have our laughs about how goofy some of this film looks, but there were some pretty cool special effects pulled off here. You know, for the 1970s.
Specifically, I think the part where on Weathertop, where the Ringwraiths are coming and they're sort of translucent. That was awesome.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, and they actually kind of apparate into that room where they stab the, they, you know, fail at stabbing the,
oh, yeah,
the little hobbits. And they just kind of like, you know, and they're just like there. That'd be really creepy. That's very ghost-like. That kind of, it definitely plays on their like ghostly evil appearance.
Very Zelda bad guy.
Weathertop to Rivendell. And Rivendell looks like I imagine Rivendell to look. And they're all like, hey, it's us. Oh, Gandalf, I'm alive, blah, 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 blah. And then they have this cool council, Elrond. Elrond does not look like Elrond that I pictured. even if I had not seen Peter Jackson's version. That does not look like Elrond. He looks like a Roman centurion just sitting there. I like Boromir. Boromir is this like big knight Viking guy. He looks like a real true Nord, you know, very Fus Roda, who clearly just wants to take the ring for Gondor.
From the very beginning. Yeah.
And they're like, all right, the council of, can I just say something? My name is Boromir, and I think the ring should go to Gondor. Am I right? And everybody's like, okay, we were just about to order food, but you've made this super awkward, so no, we're just going to get down to the point. Oh, and one of the biggest disappointments is Gimli. He doesn't look like a dwarf. He's just like a dude with a beard. He's just like a lumberjack.
Yes, Gimli's just as tall as Aragorn and everybody else. I'm like,
Yeah, that was odd.
How are they going to toss that wolf?
Could they not get an actor?
I'm like, could they not get an actor who was short?
I know.
That really is the only thing that explained it, because they needed to rotoscope this guy. I don't know. Don't think it would have been that hard.
You know what? You know else I didn't like. Okay, so in the pub at the Prancing Pony, there was blatant rotoscoped footage of actors, but in Rivendell, all the elves get to be fully animated. Ooh. I'm calling racism on this one. If I was a dwarf, I'd be like, a dwarf gets improperly drawn, but the elves get proper drawing treatment.
How do you guys like the backgrounds in this movie? Did you even notice it, or how do you like the look and feel of the movie?
Okay. I noticed the painted backdrops at Hobbiton in the Shire, and I thought those were very beautiful.
Yeah, but everything
else from Moria to Rivendell to Helm's Deep, you know, to Rohan, it just seemed very generic. Like, oh, this is a cave that you would see in like an illustration for Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, I thought that the color palette that he used, except for in Hobbiton, it was just grungy. And I don't know, it just didn't resonate with me. I've tried to find the beauty in the backgrounds and in the characters and in like the aesthetic that he chose, but I just couldn't. It was just so grungy and just not my thing. Especially when it was the rotoscoped people where there was this like weird, you know, layering on top of them. I'm just like, my eyes.
He didn't really care about the visual appeal unless it was communicating the spirit of Tolkien. I mean, that's a decision that makes this film campy and will give it a cult following, but I didn't connect with it, you know?
Yeah, I didn't appreciate it.
Some scenes in Moria were cool. For one, I love Gandalf trying out the different passwords, and he's like, he sounds like he's saying, egg roll!
Yeah.
Egg roll!
I totally thought that's what he said. It's like, who called out for egg roll?
Yeah. The orcs, the Ringwraith orcs are cool rotoscoped. I think they're cool. I think it kind of works for them. Although in one scene, I'm pretty certain I saw a plain naked dude in one of those shots. It was a naked dude.
I saw a bald guy in there somewhere, and I was like, that's odd.
Bald orc. Orcs don't go bald. But the Balrog was cool. Freaky, actually.
My thing is, I wish he would have spent a lot more time with a lot of the backgrounds. Going back to what Morgan was talking about, like backgrounds and character development. Like his whole outlook on what you said earlier, it's like, conveys the spirit of Tolkien. I'm like, well, there's something to be said about something being aesthetically pleasing to the eye and, you know, drawing people in. So I think they missed that.
But I think from his perspective, there's something to be said about not being aesthetically pleasing and still successful. Because this movie really successful. It had like a $3 million budget, and then it made about $30 million in the box office and was considered to be a huge success.
Huh, okay.
Well, yeah, who knew, right?
showing
someone this movie nowadays and say, do you think this movie was a hit? You would not get, oh yeah, yeah. But it was.
So I liked the Balrog.
Yes, what do you like
about him? He has the body of an ape, the head of a lion, which is a cool... Okay, that was creative. That was a cool design choice. Whether he liked it or not. I don't know, I thought it was cool. He just kind of like floats in, you know, and when he's scary, he's like, move aside, orcs, you know. So I thought it was cool. The scene where Gandalf faces off against the Balrog is definitely not as dramatic as Peter Jackson's. He's like, you cannot pass. And I'm like, oh, here it comes, here it comes. And he's just like, you shall not pass. I'm falling, fly, you fools, you know. And I was like, hey, where's the, and, you know, you kind of have to, like I said, you have to reverse engineer what you know from Peter Jackson's films.
I liked his interpretation of that scene because I think that scene is one of the most iconic in the Fellowship of the Ring for Peter Jackson. Mm. And so just to hear it, you know, enunciated differently or emphasis on different parts of it. I mean, it wasn't even a big deal compared to Peter Jackson's. It's just like, oh, well, he fell, and then they try to be like, no, no, and then they run away. I mean, a little less dramatic, but this whole movie on a scale is less dramatic.
Yeah, totally. And actually, I don't know if it was like this for y'all, but everything after Moria just kind of seemed to float away like a dream. Like,
yeah.
It just kind of seemed to kind of bob in and out, and like, okay, we're here now, now we're here. Oh, no, orcs, oh, no, captured. It didn't have that flow or drama that the first part of the Fellowship had.
Yeah, I agree. The beginning was really good. And I would say I'm held my attention mostly through where the actual Fellowship of the Ring ends. But with the ending of this one, you know, yeah, when they're in the visiting Galadriel and whatnot, it's not as clear. The final battle's a little like, I don't know, it's interesting. But really, once it hits the Two Towers section of the movie, I'm out. I think it's maybe because I'm expecting it to be done. I'm like, no, it should have ended here, and I need to recoup, and then I come back. But it was muddy, I couldn't really stay focused, and it's just like, wow, there has been so much introduced to this point that I can't take it in anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where I think a straight-up attempt to adapt all three films into one film just gets doesn't seem plausible, because I just got done watching the Rankin Bass Return of the King, which was the first time I had seen it, but I thought that it was all three movies in one movie, but it really wasn't. It kind of skips over one and two and moves into three. It just kind of lightly sprinkles over one and two.
I think he was trying to like finish off this version, because this one doesn't have it.
It would seem that way. Yeah.
I feel like the best way to do this movie, if you were to do all three, you would have to skip the Two Towers. Like, everything in the Two Towers just cut out, for the most part.
And boys are going to hate us for this, but the Two Towers, like, what it really did was just establish Gandalf's ascension to a white wizard, the involvement of Theoden in the War of the King, and the downfall of Saruman.
Yeah.
And bringing Gollum back into the story, into the equation. So that's pretty much all it establishes. And so if I would have been forced to include all three books into one film, then yes, I would glaze over the Two Towers. Even though it's my favorite out of the books, it's my favorite out of the PJ's movies, the battles are bigger statistically in Return of the King, and the stakes are higher. So yes, I would focus most of my time on the Fellowship, which has that, you know, all the fans love the Fellowship, and then Return of the King, which is the exciting conclusion. So I kind of wish he had done that with this. But there are some notes to be made about Two Towers. First of all, Grima Wormtongue is even now more creepy with the addition of the creeper mustache.
Everything just gets creepier with
the mustache.
That is a really true point.
And they call him Grima Wormtongue instead of Grima Wormtongue, so he sounds like a poison-type Pokemon. Grimer, I choose you.
Well, and I...
Speaking of Pokemon... Treebird is in there too. Okay, go ahead, Chelsea.
Speaking of Harry Potter, it's like total Wormtail type. How do you trust anybody with the word worm in their name? How? You just can't.
Yes, it's like, hi, I'd like to apply for a job as King Theoden's advisor. Oh, sure. What's your name? Grima Wormtongue. Okay. When can you come interview the, you know? Why did they see that coming? It's totally in there. Hello, my name is Vesivius Evil Monster. I'm here to be the new nanny. you know. Baron von Vadguy, at your service. I'd like to be your butler. You know, these are names that you should not trust.
It's Badguy's French. It's Muppet's reference. I mean, at this point, like, there's nothing for me to say about the Two Towers sequence because I was just so disengaged and uninterested in everything that happened at that point. I'm just like, oh, let's just move on. I mean, I know Gollum comes, and then we visit, you know, Rohan, and then there's the battle. But all of a sudden, I was watching this, and I swear I was paying attention, but next thing I know, battle at Helm's Deep. Like, we were just in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. Why? Like, and that? Who is this, and why? And okay, never mind.
And we're done.
And literally, we're done right after that.
I love the ending. It's like, huzzah! Orcs are vanquished, Saruman is defeated, and we save Middle-earth! Roll credits.
I know.
Like, wait, what about Shelob? Treebeard just scooped up Merry and Pippin and went off in the wilderness. What happened with that?
There was, like, no resolution for any of that.
What about the ring? Wasn't the ring the whole point of it?
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah! I was like, I don't get it. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, the ring, that too. That thing.
Oh, that was
funny. Gandalf's like, yeah, whatever. Weeks later, Gandalf is like, all right, we have rebuilt Helm's Deep and the kingdom of Rohan is safe. And Aragorn's like, hey. Oh, and Theoden is like, hey, thanks for your help. Hey, so what was that help you needed about that ring? Oh, crap. get the eagles. Why didn't we use them in the first place?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the ending was very abrupt and, The fact that it was just two out of the three movies just kind of is a bad taste in one's mouth. I really wish he could have finished it, but I don't know if I could have sat through a movie that had all three.
No, I couldn't
have. All three books.
Now, here's a question.
Although the Two Towers was very abbreviated, very much abridged in this movie.
Now, I have a question for you guys. If Ralph Bakshi were to somehow get funding today in 2014... To do this final movie, would you want to see that version?
I would donate a computer to his studio myself so that they could do some computer-based matting of characters and stuff.
Well, that's one thing, because if they were to do this again today to, like, finish the saga, you couldn't do a CGI version. You had to have it look and feel kind of like it was from the same movie, but improved, right?
Yeah.
So you... I mean, it couldn't just, I don't know, or they could just fix it all up and say, yeah, we learned from our mistakes.
I don't know. Those are all kind of techniques from, like, a bygone era, so I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. That's a very good question.
I guess the world will never know.
I would think, and this is my bottom line for the film, I would think that audiences today would have a really hard time relating to an animated Return of the King like Ralph Bakshi did the first books.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Just because rotoscoping is very much outdated, it's not relatable to animation fans.
What are you saying about us?
Okay, it's not. It doesn't seem as
we're
relatable
outdated
to audiences.
And we don't relate to fans.
we're washed up.
That's true.
Yeah, strike that, reverse it. But I don't know. I just don't think it would make an impact on audiences today like it did back then.
Totally.
But you are right. It was a success when it was released in 1978. You know,
it was 1978.
So I hate to be cynical about it, but I don't know. It would be really weird if he did the exact same techniques and treatment on The Return of the King.
Yeah.
What would he do for Shelob? Just like rotoscope a tarantula, just have it crawling across the screen.
Oh, good times.
I hope Ralph Bakshi never listens to this episode.
I also. Okay, so speaking of Ralph Bakshi today, we talked about the Kickstarter that he was doing. I was also looking up cells for this movie, because it's my dream to own just a bunch of cells, mostly from Disney stuff, but I'll take a Lord of the Rings one, why not? And so apparently on eBay, he himself, Ralph Bakshi, from his own account, is selling a bunch of cells from his films, and there's about 10 of them from Lord of the Rings, and some of them are kind of cool, you know, with, like, main characters. Yes, I'll include the link in the show notes, and the link's right here for you, Mason.
Oh,
and
cool.
And for just a mere $295, you can own a real-life autographed production cell. I think that if I were to choose one of these, I would choose the one with Saruman and Gandalf kind of in debate.
Oh, the kind of rock and sock and boppers over there?
Totally. Or there's one.
I would do Aragorn. Let's see. What's this one of Aragorn and Boromir in a lover's embrace?
Yeah, and to me it looks here. Like a side-scroll, like, fighting game. Like,
oh, yeah!
It comes complimentary autograph, it says, and fast and free shipping. All right, so let's rate this movie.
Okay, so here's my final rating. I'm going to do 2.5 stars for Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings. Here's why. The film definitely succeeds as an animated illustration of the Lord of the Rings, but I don't think it's effective as an animated film. And so while I do think that the heavy use of rotoscoping is, while that technique is revolutionary and it shows the independent spirit of Ralph Bakshi, and I know that with Wizards it was actually a necessity but kind of grew into his trademark, it's still kind of weird and it doesn't really work for me. And like Morgan was talking about, the way the characters just don't seem to blend in with the backgrounds kind of hurts the aim of illustration. You know, even illustrations need to have good design and good composition. And so from an animation student standpoint, I didn't really like the film. But as a Tolkien fanboy, I really appreciated a chance to watch a different interpretation of the books from Peter Jackson's. And so, 2.5 is respectable, but not a great animated film, in my opinion. Chills. I hate to be so meh about it. I mean, there were lots of things I did like about it, but...
I know.
It just doesn't seem to have aged well.
Definitely has not. I hate being negative at all, and this just makes me sad to say it, but I would probably give it, just on the fact that I sincerely doubt that I'll ever willingly watch this movie again, I'll give it like 1.5 stars.
1.5 stars?
I don't even know why.
Is this your lowest rating yet?
I think this is all of our lowest ratings yet.
Hear ye. No, I've given a 2.5 before, I'm pretty sure.
Honestly, I'm pretty sure that I gave even The Thief and the Cobbler, I gave a better score than this.
It wasn't even completed.
I'm sorry, I can't even do it. But I will, like I said before, in props to them, it's something that you spend a lot of time doing, and you spend a lot of time and energy trying to come up with something, and the fact that you just went out, and he went out and just, you know, was a doer, I can give him, as a person, a good old 4 stars, like, I appreciate the man, not so much the project, but I appreciate the man.
Thank you, Chelsea. So, man, I hadn't even given any thought to what I would rate this movie until now.
It's all on you, Morgan.
I'm in a bit of a pickle.
It's all on you. Save the rating of this film.
Well, I can tell you that I'm not going to go higher than 2.5 stars. I really was actually invested in this movie at the beginning. Like, very jarring visuals at the beginning where I'm like, whoa, I had to like slap myself to be like, what are you watching? And then, you know, then I accepted the visuals and then I was able to move on and enjoy the story. And I really did like the story for the most part and the characters. And then it hits Moria after Moria. And then it hits the Two Towers sequences. And it's just, oh, it drags and it's slow and it's not clean. And they're still, I still get jarred by the visuals occasionally from time to time where I'm like, what did I just see? And so, man, for that reason, I'm going to go straight in the middle and give it 2 stars. Enough said.
2 stars. Wow, I was the optimist in this one. Optimist Prime is me.
Okay, so we asked our listeners what they thought, and normally we get a lot of response, but this time, crickets for the most part. I said, hey, we're reviewing Bakshi's Lord of the Rings. What are your thoughts on this movie? And so we only got 2 tweets back. Eric Faulkner, who's one of our friends, he said,
"Oh, Eric,
his use of rotoscoping seems a little crazy. He uses it more than it should be used with animation." true. And then, Eric,
truer words have never been said.
And then Kimberly Hayner says, ugh. The side smile face where it's like, not so sure about that.
Oh, the meh smiley.
The meh smile. And that's all we got, guys. So,
I loved hers. Awesome.
Okay, so now let's go into the mailbag.
We did get a few Lord of the Rings emails, and the first one is from Robert L. Hi, Morgan, Chelsea, and Mason. I wanted to thank you for taking the time to read my email and comments on YouTube/Twitter. It means a lot that you guys reply. I have never seen Ralph Bakshi's version of The Lord of the Rings until now. I am not a major fan of the Lord of the Rings series, and I just got the basics regarding the canon of the world. I found the movie to be as interesting as the live-action version, and the book is very good, but there is something about this film that seemed off. The blending of the animation to the rotoscoped animation makes it look like a really bad version of a live-action meets animation movie. I know that during the later part of the 70s and nearly all of the 80s, animation was in the dark ages, and this movie, I believe, reflects that. I know it deals with grim ideas, but the literal lighting of most of the movie I found was really dark and made it difficult to watch without itching my eyes often. Also, this movie was so long, I don't believe I've ever watched an animated movie that was over 2 hours long before, but at the same time, I really liked that it was so long and was able to cover several, if not most, of the original themes from the novel. I would have found this movie to be more enjoyable if the animation were more reflective of Sleeping Beauty due to its lighting and medieval time placement. I feel that Sleeping Beauty's animation style would fit this movie very well, and it made it even more enjoyable, at least for me. Thanks again for reading my email. I hope to talk to you soon. Looking forward to more videos and podcasts. Rob. All right, thanks, Rob. Our next email is from Eric. Here are two things I have to say about The Lord of the Rings by Ralph Bakshi. One, it does take a while to like this movie if you're not used to the art style. I know I first saw this version in 2000 and did not like it until a few years later. The animation is not for every animation fan. Two, I want to tell you that Audible does have a Lord of the Rings book unabridged by Rob Inglis. I do have The Hobbit narrated by him, and he does a great job. His narrating style is also like Jim Dale from the Harry Potter books, and he does change his voice with the different characters in the books. Thanks again. I'll talk to you later. Eric. Awesome. I didn't know about that. I'm sure Audible has a lot of versions of The Lord of the Rings, but I will be sure to include that version with our Audible link. So if you're interested, you can go to rotoscopers.com/audible and you can find that version of The Lord of the Rings audiobook.
We always get emails, and there's some fantastic emails, and sometimes we just don't have time to read them, so some of these go a little bit further back. This one is talking about our Monster in Paris episode, and he says, hi, it's me again, Joshua. I had a good title for your Monster in Paris episode. Monster in Paris equals Ratatouille with less rats, because it's in Paris. Also, a little guilty pleasure I want you guys to review. VeggieTales. I want to know your thoughts on an episode or one of the movies, so what do you guys have to say? Like to talk about tomatoes? Joshua K. This is actually a funny story. I was at work, this was a couple months ago, but I was at work, and then I went out to lunch, and I'm just out there, I'm eating my lunch, and I decide I'm going to sit outside today. And as I'm sitting outside, I hear two guys talking about animation, and it's like in a very production side of animation. I'm like, you don't hear these types of discussions in Nashville. Like, you just don't. And as I just couldn't help myself. I asked him, I was like, who are you? Like, what do you do? It turned out to be the creator of VeggieTales. And I was like, awesome.
What?
Yeah. Cause.
Was it Billy Graham?
No.
Oh.
Billy Graham's not the creator of VeggieTales.
Oh, I've got that wrong. Sorry.
No, and so it was just really cool. I got to talk to him and his friend who, he was an artist or something. And it was just, we had a nice little discussion during my time as we talked about, DreamWorks and a whole bunch of stuff because DreamWorks actually just bought.
Yeah, yeah.
Big Idea. And so.
Well, are they going to keep to the original spirit, no pun intended, of the show with the new Netflix series?
You know, I have no idea. He was out of it by now. He's like, yeah, I created it, but it sold, and so I don't do it anymore. So I don't know what they have planned on doing from future episodes of it. But I always liked VeggieTales. Any times that I ever saw it, I haven't seen all of them.
But, you know, even the ones that I've seen, I've been like, hey, that's cool. So, yeah, that's my VeggieTales moment.
Larry Boy and the Fib from Outside Space. I heard Justin Bieber's in talks for voicing Larry the Cucumber.
Yeah, right.
Just kidding.
Justin Bieber is an abomination now.
Thus saith Morgan, judgment is decided.
Deport him! Deport him! Deport him!
Unclean! Unclean! I got a little piece of fan mail here from Billy Lockwood. To Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robson, Mason Smith, and the other Rotoscopers contributors, I'm a big fan of your animation podcast and all of the informative articles you post on the site. I think my favorite episode was the Toy Story episode. You have good taste. Mason and the other Rotoscopers, I am impressed with your abilities to quote animation movies, including the Toy Story episode. I'm a fan of animation and currently work for an architecture company in Baltimore. Cool. On the support webpage, there's no link that goes to a PayPal webpage to make a donation. Could you add a link here so I could make a donation to your website? Also, any thoughts on selling Rotoscopers merchandise, like a t-shirt or magnets? Thanks, Billy Lockwood.
Well, Billy, you
are about to strike gold with that idea. I've been campaigning for Rotoscopers t-shirts for a while, and we've been talking about it, but I think this year we're definitely going to get serious about them. But I agree about Rotoscopers merchandise.
Mason, do you not know about the Rotoscopers contest?
What?
Oh, it's coming. Rotoscopers t-shirt contest. Calling all artists. Chelsea, in the last episode, had an incredible introduction to this. She made it seem like she was the Fates from Hercules, and she was announcing the Rotoscopers t-shirt contest. So actually, if you go to rotoscopers.com/t-shirt contest... it will bring you right to the link where you can find all the information about it. The contest is going until the end of April, and what we are going to do is you just send us an email with your design at therotoscopers@gmail.com, and then us three as the hosts will be an executive committee, and we'll go over all of the designs. We'll pick our favorites from there, and then we will have a fan vote on what should be our very first t-shirt that the Rotoscopers do. So, pretty awesome. And then the winner gets a free t-shirt, and then we'll start selling them on the site.
They also get immortality in the halls of the Rotoscoper forever. Songs will be sung of their graphic design abilities.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Mm-hmm. So, and then, yeah, it'd be cool to do other stuff like magnets and stickers. And I don't know. I guess we'll have to see how it goes with the t-shirts. I mean, come on. I just saw the other day that the Pokemon podcast, and they've done t-shirts for a long time and merchandise, they're doing custom pillows. And I kid you not, I will include a link in the show notes. They're doing custom pillows with their logo, which is like a purple Pokeball that you can sit on your couch. Yes.
Do they get any sales on the pillows?
Oh, my gosh. I want a pillow and sheets set.
How would you... Imagine how cool you will look walking around on campus or at your school or you know, wherever, in your Rotoscopers t-shirt.
Oh, and for the PayPal address, just go to rotoscopers.com/support, and there will be a link there on how you can donate via PayPal, whatever you want, whether it's 50 cents to $500. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Just kidding.
Whoa.
There will be a link there.
$5 million.
I had a link there, and then I accidentally changed the picture that was there, so it disappeared. And so now there's no way to donate. So that is how you donate. I'm going to read the next one. It's from Mark, who's one of our writers. He says, here's a question for a future podcast from Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. Which famous person who has never done voiceover work before would you want to voice an animated character?
I want Jeff Bridges to do more anime character voices.
I really liked him as
Big Z. A little bit in Last Unicorn. I think there should be more Jeff Bridges. He's got such a cool voice.
But he has already done. I don't know. Because we're normally so anti-famous people just getting an animated character just because.
You know, it's...
Okay, can I give you a little help, Chelsea?
Yeah.
Okay, if you were an animated character, if someone made an animated character of you, who would you want to voice you? What famous celebrity?
An animated character of me... Let's see. I have no idea.
That did not help.
Yeah, I don't know. This is.
I guess not.
This is one of those questions that
I know if Morgan was animated, I know who would voice her.
Who?
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
There you go.
It's true.
There you go.
You know, it, thinking about this question, if you would have asked me a few years ago, I would have said I would have loved to have seen Idina Menzel voice an animated character. And that actually came true. Yeah. I thought she was super cool. Personally, I think I wish she would have maybe voiced a villain rather than Elsa, who's not so much a villain. But other than that, I'm kind of at a loss for who I would want to voice an animated character. More Jim Cummings, that's what I say. That's more right. Rob Paulson.
Rob Paulson's awesome.
Jim Cummings. I was an animated character. I think I would be voiced by, who's that guy? I forget his name. Tom Cruise? I'm just kidding. Has Tom Cruise ever been an animated character?
I wouldn't
doubt. Has he ever done voice work for an animation? Hey, if Brad Pitt can do it. I'd be Andy Samberg. Andy Samberg would be the guy who would voice me.
Nice.
Just because I feel like I have a personality like his.
Andy Samberg anyway. It is.
All right, here we go. Name, LXE from LXE Design. Website, lxedesign.deviantart.com. They say, hey guys, I recently found podcasts and fell in love with them. Over the last few weeks, I listened to practically all of them. You somehow managed to engage the listener in a way that makes one feel like I'm there listening to a discussion between their friends and not a podcast. Well, that is exactly what we set out to do. So good for us. And thanks for your kind words, LXE. They continue by saying, I currently study entertainment design in Singapore, and while the primary focus of my classes seems to be on games, it's animation that is the love of my life. I suppose this may be why I'm spending my Valentine's Day with you guys. Aw. Homework is even more enjoyable nowadays thanks to your great sense of humor. I just wanted to say thank you for all the great work you do. I will most definitely continue to listen. Take care and happy Valentine's Day in the least creepy way possible, I swear. Don't worry, we didn't get any creepiness off of that. We think it's very sweet that you're spending your Valentine's Day with us. Yeah, thank you for your kind words. Wow, entertainment design in Singapore.
That's pretty sweet.
I wish I was a little more game development and design. I wish I was more game development savvy so I could do more game design because I feel like, you know, I feel like I should know coding and stuff to back up my love of video games. But that's really cool. For me, game design is pretty much animation. Like, games are pretty much animation, but scripted. So I totally respect you for studying games and animation and games. So I'm actually thumbing through your DeviantArt right now, and I see a lot of cool stuff. Your scarecrow lady. I like your little bunny ear sprites. And, yeah.
She's going to go crazy. Cool stuff. Like, oh my gosh!
Mason, have you heard about the AnimAddicts hashtag?
The what?
So
okay, I feel like I have. I feel like I'm totally out of the loop in this episode. Did you know there's a T-shirt? No. Did you know there's a hashtag? No.
So
did you know bring it on John Lasseter in the next episode? What?
Yeah, Morgan met him at Pixar. Morgan. Didn't you know?
Yeah. Come on now. Well,
in an arm wrestling match.
Well, on Twitter, you can now type in A-N-I-M addicts as a hashtag, and you can, that is for anybody, if you're ever listening to this episode and you're thinking, hey, I want to tweet about this, that's the hashtag you're going to be able to use, and each individual episode will have a hashtag of its own to prove to the world that you made it to the end of the episode. So, just talking about it in general, you just type in hashtag A-N-I-M addicts.
Okay, so this episode's hashtag is going to be hashtag so many miniskirts. Because holy Aragorn. So thanks you guys for listening. I thought this was a really great episode where we got to talk about a movie that maybe we wouldn't have watched otherwise. And you may not have watched otherwise. So let us know your thoughts. Be sure to send us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemail or 406-646-6575. Let us know what you're thinking about this movie and maybe if you agree or disagree with some of our opinions. We love to hear them. You can also send us an email at therotoscopers@gmail.com. rotoscopers.com. You can find us on the web at rotoscopers.com. That's where you can find all the great news articles that our writing team puts together, along with reviews and occasionally interviews for our other podcast, the Animation Interviews Podcast. It's good stuff over there. Obviously, you can listen to us on Hypable or Animated Views, Stitcher, iTunes, and everywhere where good podcasts are available. We love it when you leave us a review in iTunes and subscribe. It helps support the show more than you know. So, guys, what is our next episode going to be?
We have it listed as Balto.
So again, I'm totally out of the loop. Let's see.
Well, we were going to move on into a dog segment. So we're going to do animated movies with dogs.
I am really excited about, because we've got a couple really good ones on the list. But what's up?
I like Balto. Let's do dogs.
Dogs. So we're moving on to our dog series. We're going to be doing Balto, followed by
Up as the user voted episode.
Oh, snap.
And then
freaking love Up.
I'm so excited. All dogs go to heaven.
All Yay! Good things. All good Sweet. Things. So yes, right. Be sure to send in your emails or voicemails for those episodes, and we'll be sure to include them in those episodes. So again, we're doing Balto, Up, and All Dogs Go to Heaven. And hey, maybe we'll do Bolt afterwards. Why not?
Why not?
Also, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Morgan Stradling, Chelsea is at Chelsea Robson, and Mason is at Mason SMTX. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Oh, he's got these Sam. Nice man. I have a top 20 priceless gifts from Ralph Bakshi prepared. I have a screen recorder and I have a GIF animation generator.
Bring it on, dude.
So the Rotoscopers will have a fine clickbait 20 list of 20 blankety blank 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 articles.
You gotta click number. You won't believe number 5.
You won't. You know. True patriots can't cry. Can't not cry after watching this video.
I'm on FoxNews.com
a lot. Ooh. I know. They're like, what are those things that jump on your back?
Ugh. I hate those things. Those zombie things from Ocarina of Time. Yes.
Redeads. And you're like, get off of me!
Totally.
My eyes! The goggles do nothing!
All the how would you like a pillow in the shape of Mason? I'm just kidding. There's so much stupid fan art on the internet.
So
My Little Pony, thank you for ruining the internet.
We're doing Balto. It's a combination of Balto and Up.